Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's Roundup. No special announcements or anything, so let's jump right in. First up, Modern Vintage Gamer recently posted a video about Pretendo, which is a homebrew online service that replaces the one that Nintendo just shut down for the Wii U and 3DS services. So the video is kind of a walkthrough of the state of Pretendo right now, which is very good. You could get on and play as if you were connected to the Nintendo network, up to about, I guess, about 70% of the features that you would expect. There's still some work to be done, but it's just absolutely awesome to see the community step up and really take over where Nintendo left off. And this is one of these things where, you know, I kind of understand both sides. First, on the side of somebody who bought a piece of equipment and still wants to use it, of course, I really want to see services like this pop up. But on the flip side, if you're Nintendo and you're focusing on whenever the Switch 2 is coming out and the Switch and your current line of products, how long can you really spend all that money supporting the older ones? So I think this is a very cool transition over to a homebrew hosted version of this. I hope Nintendo doesn't get too happy with it, and I hope they just leave everybody alone. But the only kind of downside is this, it does require jailbroken 3DS and Wii U's. It would be kind of cool if there was an easier way to do that. But, I mean, jailbreaking both of those are fairly easy these days, and there's some great walkthroughs that just kind of get you every step of the way and make it pretty simple. It's the last time I did the Wii U was a little bit overwhelming just because I'd never done one before, but you just walk through it step by step, slowly but surely, verify everything as you go, and anybody could do it if you just have a little bit of patience. So if you want more info, I strongly recommend watching MVG's video. Even if you don't really want to do anything like this, it's still pretty cool to be aware that things like this exist, including stuff like Excellent Kai and even the X-Band that was recently brought back to life. So thanks to MVG for keeping on this stuff. And of course, and especially thanks to the Pretendo team for putting out a service that people could just start using and not have to worry about not being able to play their games online anymore. Next up, Greg from Laser Bear just opened pre-orders on a 72-pin replacement for the front-loading NES called the Slot Master. This is actually an open-source project from Merlin Shaw, and Greg is making it completely under the proper open-source terms as a kit that you could buy totally complete that you just need to plug in, or as a do-it-yourself kit if you want to solder it all together or anything like that. The price is about $30 plus shipping for a completed unit, or $20 for the do-it-yourself version. And this has a tray built so that you slot the NES cartridge directly in. You don't push down on it. So basically, it's like a homebrew version or a do-it-yourself open source version of the Blinking Light Win, which was released a long time ago and it's been out of stock forever. So I'm interested to see reviewers talk about this and give their opinions, because one of the biggest complaints of the Blinking Light Win was the grip of death, which is very common on a lot of clone consoles as well. And I was kind of interested to see how this compares to that after a normal break-in period. It is very possible that when you plug in your cartridge for the first couple of times, it is going to be very tight. But do you need to like step on your NES and use all your weight to pull the cartridge out, or can you just wiggle it side to side and get it out with no problem, and will it break in properly? I think finding 72-pin replacements no matter what, whether it's top loader style like this, which is just oriented sideways, or especially the kind where you push the cartridge down, any of those 72 pin replacements have been absolutely nightmarish to find that actually work the way that the original NES did. So it's very cool to see an affordable homebrew open source version that you could just try yourself and see what happens. And the best stuff about things like this, if you find that the spec'd out 72 pin connector might be too tight, we could all just try to hunt down one that's made a tiny bit looser, or maybe even we all try to do some kind of project to have one made for us in bulk or something like that. So I don't know. I think this is a great place to start. Maybe this will end up being perfect as is. Maybe this will be a good starting ground for furthering this project even more. But if you're interested, especially if you have a front-loading NES that's not working properly, definitely check out the links. And if you want to build your own, all of the open source links are there as well. But if you're like me and you just want to have something arrive and just bolt it in, then just pre-order the one from Greg. Darksoft has just announced that he's considering making one final run of MVS multicarts for the Neo Geo arcade systems. It looks like he's not going to be making any more AES multicarts at all, and this MVS batch would only be made if he got enough people to sign up, because they're very costly and very, they're just a giant pain to make. So they would have to have enough people sign up for an interest check list in order for that to work, for them to actually put it into production and then be able to charge you and sell it to you. So if you own an original Neo Geo MVS arcade machine, one of those stand-up Big Reds or anything, and you don't have some kind of multicart like this, I would strongly consider it, just because if this really is going to be the last batch, this is a great way to play all those games on a stand-up arcade machine. Now, of course, if you already have a Mister, that core is excellent. You know, maybe you have one of those newer redone 161 and 1 carts. I haven't seen too many of those out. I've seen a couple people post about making them by hand. So it's at the end of the day, it's going to be really complicated to make one of those. And yeah, of course, you could buy one of the cheap ones off of AliExpress, but roll the dice on what you're getting. You know, we talked years ago about proper voltage in flash carts. And while some of the talk was just about good practices, not really a safety concern, those 161 and ones were absolutely a safety concern. And there are some that are made better now, but, you know, good luck finding them. So hopefully someday we'll get cheap multis like that. But at the moment today, if you have a rebuilt arcade machine, this, and of course the Neo SD, if those are still being sold, are definitely better choices because they're made properly and you don't have to worry about them killing your Neo Geo MVS arcade board. So basically, you know, this isn't for everybody. It's expensive, and if you already own a Mister or if you were planning on getting one, it would be totally fair to say a Mister kit costs less than this. Why would I buy this? I get it. I understand. But on the flip side, that's not for you then. This is for Neo Geo collectors who might look at something like this and go, heck, the three games I'm missing out of my collection are worth much more than this, so I'll just pick this one up for those couple of games and still use my originals when I want to, or keep my originals on a shelf and keep them in nice condition and just use the multi. I know a lot of people who use their ROM carts for all consoles that way. So basically, if you are interested in one of these, and if you think you fall into the category of somebody who would really benefit one, you got to sign up for an account on Arcade Projects, but do that, put your name in for the interest check. There's no money involved now, but as soon as enough people sign up, then it would be the typical pre-orders where they would have to be made, then you'd have to pay it afterwards, I guess. So basically, just check out the thread on Arcade Projects for more info. And if you want really like an in-depth comparison between this and the Neo SDs, I did a video back in 2019 that is still pretty much relevant, to be honest with you. The only thing that I missed in this one was when the Neo SD added support for Neo Geo CD games, but there's only a handful of those that offer anything other than the original cartridges would be. So, yeah, I believe we have that listed on the wiki as well, on the consolemods.org wiki. Could be wrong about that, but pretty sure we already added that. So if you want, just check out the video to see if this is for you. But, you know, it's sad to see these go. I get it, right? A lot of people are switching to emulation. A lot of people are crossing their fingers that, you know, version a million of those 161 and ones are going to come out and actually be good. But that's just not the case today. So if you need one of these, now's the time. Next up, there's been a pretty big update to the Sega Saturn core on the Mister from SRG320. And while normally I would want to talk about this in the context of Lou's updates, I thought that Dan's post on the Puro website really highlighted this change so well that I wanted to talk about it separately. And I'll just run through it very quickly, but definitely check out the post if you want more details. But basically, SRG320 has updated the shaders and how the blending is done to look much closer to real hardware. And there is a screenshot here that was actually done by a South Korean Mister user named Sebaro. Very sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong, where a screenshot of the same thing in original hardware, the previous Saturn core, and then the one that was just released just a few weeks ago, and it really shows how much farther it's come. I mean, it really is starting to look very, very close, if not exactly like original hardware, and I just thought this was a really great way to highlight it. I thought the screenshots really spoke for themselves. So basically, if you own a Mister and you want to play the Saturn core, it's still in development, of course, but it's just run the updater because it's definitely a noticeable difference on a lot of the games that you might be playing with 3D graphics. Also, I'd like to welcome Dan to the Retro RGB contribution team. Dan Thrax has been over on the Shiro crew for a while, and I've been a fan of his posts and all that stuff, so it's very, very cool to see him posting on Retro RGB as well. And, I love that website. I love that crew. I always try to find ways to promote them as much as I can. So stuff like this is obviously a perfect crossover for that. And I hope to see more like it. Tito from Macho Nacho Productions just did a video highlighting a brand new Game Boy Advance kit that, much like some of the other kits Tito's been showing off recently, all you need to do is transplant the proprietary chips from an original GBA to this, and this kit includes absolutely everything else that you might need. Now, if you're a beginner, that might actually be harder than doing something like replacing the capacitors and cleaning up an original, but if you're a pro, it might actually take a lot less time to just transplant these chips than it would to do a full refurbishing on another one. It really just comes down to the skill level and the tools that you're using if you're able to replace or swap these chips over to the new board. Tools are huge. I talk about that all the time, and I've told the story a million times about how when I bought the right equipment, which was only a few dollars more, my skill set changed overnight versus trying to force mediocre equipment to perform well. So this is definitely something I'm excited in. I've been loving seeing these replacement motherboards that have all these new features built in. And while this one was very cool, it does kind of take a bunch of the other stuff that's already been out and integrated in. But I'd also really like to see, since now you have the opportunity of having everything built onto the motherboard, what about one with a true digital HDMI output? You know, what about stereo speakers, even though the audio in a Game Boy Advance isn't great? There's those Game Gear shells that have two speaker holes in them that are aftermarket and look good. So I love the project where it is right now, but as a nerd who's in product development, who's been in product development for 20 years, I also see where these products can go next. And I really hope the teams behind them jump on it, because while the project in its current form is really perfect for anybody with a dead GBA that's basically unfixable or a really, really beat up one, it could be pretty soon where people might be taking, you know, okay condition GBAs and doing the swap instead of any other kind of modding, because you would be able to get all that functionality. Or maybe you have an older consolizer, one of those terrible Intec boards that used a Game Boy Advance, and now you just want it as both a handheld and maybe with HDMI out. I could see a lot of people taking those older kits, that especially the Intec ones that don't perform very well, and pulling the chips out of that one and putting it on a new board to really breathe some new life into that. So overall, as always, just awesome video from Tito. Really great showing both the installation and the features. And even if you're mildly interested in this stuff, it's always a good watch. But I think this is cool because we're seeing all of these different replacement boards for different handhelds come out. And I think it really is going to start to add some cool features and really just extend the life and preserve these consoles a lot longer. Because all you have to worry about is if a couple of chips are still working on the original. And if they are, here's a brand new set of everything to put them into. Could last another 20, 30 years. Who knows? But check out the video if you're interested. The developer Rumblemints just posted their latest NES to SNES conversion for the game Chip 'n Dale Rescue Rangers. This, much like Rygar, Super Dodgeball, and Kid Icarus, was done in the same style that the developer Infidelity has done, which gets you things like less sprite flicker, less slowdown, and the ability to add SNES-focused features like MSU1, and not in the case of these games, but at least the possibility of newer features, different button mappings, etc. So I actually did a live stream testing this out, and it's funny because I don't think I've played any of these games before in the past, and it was really neat to experience them both for the first time, but also experience the original NES and then switch over to SNES. And Super Dodgeball is now going to be my go-to to describe and demonstrate how important these conversions are. The NES version has so much sprite flicker, it's almost unplayable to me now, even in composite video where things blend together a little bit easier. After playing that for a few minutes and then jumping over to this SNES conversion, it was insane, the difference. And it's definitely something where maybe these aren't your favorite games, but you're curious why I'm always talking about these conversions. Try Super Dodgeball. Absolutely try that. Also, I was never really a fan of Rygar, but the slowdown in the NES version, you didn't even need to get past the first part of the first stage to see the difference in that one. But also, Rumblemints added MSU1 support for Rygar, both for the audio track, but there was also in that one some sprite changes to the arcade version. And the MSU1 option is there for Chip 'n Dale, although not all tracks are available. Rumblemints couldn't find tracks that really fit perfectly. However, if you play the MSU1 version, you get the opening, you get some music, and then it just defaults back to Membler's sound emulator. So basically the original NES version, if those aren't available yet. I saw when I was doing the live stream, I saw Q-Bear in the chat, so I have a feeling they might be working on possibly getting some more MSU1 support for it. But this was very cool. You know, I always like experiencing these, and some of them are massive differences, like Infidelity's Metroid, but even, you know, Super Dodgeball, that's just a go-to, because you don't need to spend more than a minute if you really want to check out the differences. So definitely a shout out to Rumblemints. Also, just on a personal note, the only reason I haven't covered these in the past is just time. That's it. It was never any disrespect meant. I wish I had been able to keep up with all of these as soon as they were released, but I will try my best in the future whenever Rumblemints puts out new releases to try and keep up and do posts about them. Same with, you know, the developer Infidelity and whoever else makes these. I'm just happy I finally had time to try them. I got to show them off all in that live stream if you're interested. And it's one of the few live streams where nothing went wrong and it wasn't too long either. So if you really just want to deep dive on these, give that a watch. And, you know, thank you and shout out to Rumblemints and, of course, the developer Infidelity as well for doing these. Because once you play Super Dodgeball, you immediately know why this is a big deal, and it'd be cool to see what games are done next. You know, is there going to be, you know, on a very selfish note, is it going to be other games like Super Dodgeball where it's very noticeable and helpful, or is it going to be some epic conversion like the Metroid one? I don't know. I'm a fan of both, but I'm looking forward to seeing what comes next. Next up, Ryan from Arcades Games just posted a motion adaptive deinterlacing shootout video where he compared the RetroTINK 5X, 4K, and the PixelFX Morph. And this is a very fair video that shows you exactly what to expect when you get all of these scalers today. Obviously, all of these companies are constantly adding firmware updates and features and tweaks and stuff like that. But it's always really good to know what to expect right now and not just worry about, well, it's coming later. And I mean that for every developer, for every product. That wasn't anything specific. And, you know, the examples used here, I think, were great. The Tinks came out on top, but that's kind of expected because Mike's been hitting motion adaptive deinterlacing pretty hard ever since the release of the Tink 5X years ago. But it does show a fair state of where the Morph is at, and it's certainly not bad. It just definitely shows where there's going to be room for improvement. Now, I do hope Ryan will follow up with another video, and I know this is a big ask because I know exactly what it takes to make these videos, but I would also love to see 480p compared between them, because I have a feeling that this is going to be very display dependent. And a perfect example, I have a 2016 OLED that does a perfectly fine job with 480p. It is not the best, but no one's going to walk by and go, ugh, However, basically every PC monitor I've ever owned, including the one that's in front of me right now, looks terrible if you don't run it at its native resolution, this one being 4K. So I'd be willing to bet consoles like GameCube, Wii, original Xbox, Dreamcast, even if those need to be run through cheap analog to digital converters to get them into the Morph's HDMI-only input, I have a feeling that's really where it's going to shine, especially on panels that don't scale well. And, you know, it wouldn't be fair to take a panel that scales 480p perfectly and compare it. You're going to need to take multiple. So I would love to show that at some point. Hopefully Ryan can get to it before me, but I am going to wait to before I start reviewing the Morph till the analog modules come out, both because I think that's going to be a feature people really are going to want to know how it works, but also because I want to give the team a little more time to get the firmware worked out and kind of get out of public beta. So, you know, once again, if you want to see the state of 480i deinterlacing right now, today when you buy them, you know, Ryan's video is good. And I do hope that we're going to get more videos and more in-depth stuff soon. And hopefully the PixelFX team will listen and just take the feedback seriously and kind of apply it to firmware updates. Next, The Gaming Historian recently released a really good documentary about the story of the Oregon Trail, and this includes interviews with the original developers, as well as the team that eventually took it and made it into the game that most of us probably remember playing, and I just really enjoyed it from start to finish. I thought this was one of those things where, I remember the game, I think everybody probably remembers the game, but can it really fit a almost 90-minute documentary? Yes, absolutely. All the story in it was great. It was so cool listening to the original developers talk about it. And there was a lot in there that I didn't know at all. Like, it was originally a text-based game. I didn't know it was made basically just in a couple of weeks from a bunch of student teachers. And I also never knew what they actually made on it, which is the only sad part. But the developers took it pretty cool. So I don't know. I really liked it. And I just wanted to share it with everybody. And I know not everyone's into these documentaries that I talk about, but I just try to always bring this up whenever I see one that's really good. And especially when there's a lot of crossover, because even if you watch this with somebody who's not a huge video game fan, chances are they've at least heard of this game and possibly played it, so they might be into it too. So this is one of those that I strongly recommend. And it also reminded me that I haven't actually played this game since I was 10 years old or earlier. So I don't know, maybe one day I would love to do a live stream of this and kind of see how it holds up, you know, knowing that it was designed to be an educational game for kids. But I'm really interested to see what I would think of it today, because I certainly have some fond memories of it, but I definitely don't remember beating it. Certainly not at like 6 or 7 years old when I first played it, I believe. So I don't know. Yeah, definitely give it a try if you're into it. I thought it was a pretty good, a really good documentary. And I also liked at the end where one of the developers described and talked about the animated GIF meme that I have in the post as well. I'm not going to spoil that one. I think we'll all kind of enjoy it. But anyway, I just wanted to let everybody know about it. No Mr. Updates here this week. I had to record this weekly podcast a lot earlier than I normally would, so I missed when Lou uploaded his video, or maybe he's taking a well-deserved week off this week. Either way, I just wanted to still shout out Lou and strongly recommend that you subscribe to him as well, because I get all of my Mr. News through him, and I just really appreciate being able to get all of that info in one place. So sorry I recorded too early this week, Lou, but please subscribe to him on YouTube, and you get better visual examples and, you know, just all the stuff that you would want from this Mr. News directly from the source himself. So thanks again, Lou, and hopefully we'll pick up where we left off next week. Well, that's it for this week. As always, thanks to everybody who watches, listens, plays nicely in the comments, and especially thank you to people who support in absolutely any way, because it really is you who's keeping all of this stuff alive. I try my absolute best to do as good as I can with all of this stuff, and I couldn't do it without you. So thank you all so much, and I'll see you next week. This week's Roundup is brought to you by Neo Paradigm Entertainment, connecting Southeast Asian influencers with opportunities in the West.